Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's political podcast. I'm Laura Prendergast and I'm joined by Jane Forsyth and Katie Balls. So, Katie, this afternoon the government has published its amendment to the EU withdrawal bill. Did it clarify matters?
It did clarify matters to some extent. The problem is it hasn't solved matters for the government. So on Super Tuesday, as we've called it on this podcast, the government managed to stave off a rebellion on the meaningful vote amendment. So the idea that Parliament would have a meaningful say on the final deal. And after they got the Remain rebels to meet Theresa May, have a direct conversation, and they were sure they'd been given a great concession. Quite quickly, something appeared to be amiss because you had the Leavers and the Remainers both crying victory, and it was very hard to reconcile how both of them could have got what they've wanted. So this compromise amendment hasn't actually really survived even a second of its life, really, because as soon as word of it got out and then it was published, Dominic Grieve and Anna Soubry were quick to say that we don't support this. And what this amendment does is, the problem here, is it does give them a say. So if basically Parliament doesn't back the deal, Parliament would get a say, but it's an unamendable motion, which means that it would be something like this House says, and it would mean that, importantly, MPs in Parliament couldn't amend it to try and change the government's strategy, which is what people like Dominic Grieve wanted. So now you have the dilemma of, well, if they've already said no to it, what's going to happen when it does eventually return to the Commons? Because by now, this group feel very angry. They think they've been misled, so it's going to be a lot harder to get them on side.
This is a very risky play by the government, but I think it reflects two things. One, they think that the Grieve group are divided. They notice that Nicky Morgan and Stephen Hammond, who are normally on the kind of Remain rebel side of the divide, aren't on this issue because they are more interested in the kind of customs union compromise issue. And that is, I think, emboldening some in government. I also think that immediately after the meeting that Theresa May had with the Remain rebel MPs, the Whip's office suddenly saw quite how much concern there was on the other wing of the party about the prospect of concessions with dates in it. You know, one leading Eurosceptic said to me, anything with a date in it, and Michel Barnier has got Theresa May over a barrel, so we cannot accept anything like that. So I think that this is an attempt to divide and rule. It's an attempt to basically give enough to some of the Grieve rebels that they can accept it, and to try and detach Dominic Grieve off from at least some of his Grieve rebels who were prepared to back him on Tuesday. I think this is, as Katie said, this is a very dangerous game. Because if you're in a meeting with the Prime Minister and you think the Prime Minister has said something to you, it almost doesn't matter whether you went into that meeting convinced that something was a point of principle or not. It becomes a point of honour for you if you think you've been promised something and then you're not given it. So I think that this is an example, yet again, of a tightrope that Theresa May is trying to walk over Brexit. And, you know, at the moment she is managing to stay on the wire, but it is another reminder that she is doing this with no safety net underneath.
And I think what will be interesting is convenient timing for the Remain rebels. Dominic Grieve is on question time tonight, so I imagine Julian Smith, the chief whip, and perhaps the whole of the whip's office could have a group viewing to see what they are up against when it comes to getting this out.
There's also more bad news for Theresa May. A YouGov poll out this afternoon suggests that 2/3 of voters think she's making a mess of Brexit. James, is another headache for her, do you think?
Yes, I mean, the crucial question is, when voters say that they're making a mess, that the government is making a mess of Brexit, is that it's taking too long. I think the question is, the public, I think, I have lots of tests for the Brexit deal. But I think the voters are most worried about free movement and the money. If she can show that she has genuinely ended free movement and the amount of the money going to Brussels has been massively reduced, then I think that most voters will think that she's got a decent deal. I think the danger for her is that the total failure to prepare for no deal means that the EU might go for it on free movement. They might say, hang on a second, if you want this kind of level of access to the single market, you have to accept its four freedoms, and that includes free movement. I mean, that's the danger for Theresa May. And I think this is what's going to make the next phase of the Brexit talk so dramatic, is her failure to prepare has left her extremely vulnerable in the negotiations. If the EU tries to go for it on free movement, that is, I think, the issue that she knows is politically she cannot accept a compromise on. You know, I think there are lots of ways on ECJ jurisdiction and things like that to come up with some kind of complex way that, you know, people aren't quite clear what she's agreed to. I think on things something like free movement, that is not a technical matter. People will understand quite simply whether she has got control back of immigration policy or not.
I was quite interested this week. I was speaking to a Brexiteer and someone who'd been involved with the Leave campaign, and they were quite despondent, which I think is a more and more recurring theme at the moment with the state of the negotiations and even the Brexit side. But they were saying that actually their best hope here might be just to let Brussels make the case for the Leave camp again. So this idea that because there isn't really that leverage, they don't think someone like Michel Barnier will be able to help himself. So if they think they have one over on Britain, they can just keep pushing, and they will take it too far, because they always take it too far, is what they said. And they will do something like put freedom of movement back on the table and get to such a point that it would be a deal that they don't think that A, would be politically possible for Theresa May, and two, that a lot of Labour MPs could even back. Because if you go that much back, then it does seem mean that even if you're not prepared for no deal, the other option also isn't okay.
And just finally, the World Cup started today. James, have you been watching any football?
I haven't, but you told me on my way in that Russia had beaten Saudi Arabia 5-0. So, you know, kleptocracy versus absolute monarchy. I think there is an interesting question here about the World Cup, which is, to what extent can Vladimir Putin use it to advance his own geopolitical goals? And, you know, I think the question here is, he is obviously going to try and politicise this event, going to try and push for Russia to be treated as a normal country and all that. The question is, what happens in Russia over the next few weeks, and does it allow him to project the image of Russia to the world that he wants to? But, you know, but at least both Russia and Saudi Arabia can take consolation from the fact that the oil price is going up, and so both of them are richer than they were a few months ago.
Katie, are you going to be watching?
Yeah, I will be watching. I don't really follow sport other than the Olympics and the World Cup. So,
as a Scot, will you be supporting England?
I will be supporting England. I've actually never really supported Scotland, but I have when they played, but they just don't manage to play that much because they never seem to really get quite far enough to really get in behind them.
And James, do you think there are going to be any security issues at this World Cup?
I think that this is, I mean, the cabinet discussed this question this week about how whether England fans should go or not. I understand that Boris Johnson was kind of more bullish than most, you know, saying basically the Foreign Office has done everything they could. They'd warned fans about the things they shouldn't do. And, you know, they had no particular intelligence about a threat. I think there is an issue here, though, which is that a lot of Russian politicians seem to take the kind of Alan Clark view of football hooliganism, that it kind of makes them proud to see people, hooligans from their country beating up hooligans from other countries. And I mean, that's the potential issue. I think you've also got this whole question about kind of gay rights. Peter Tatchell has got himself arrested today in Moscow in protest. The fact that, you know, Russia and particularly Chechnya have kind of pretty deplorable policies on gay rights. And you cannot avoid, you know, people always say, let's keep politics and sport separate. It is an impossibility, because it is not like there is just a football tournament going on in Russia. You know, Vladimir Putin is at the game today. You know, he is making his point that he is there. This is his Russia. And he is trying to showcase a particular view of Russia to the world. I mean, that's one of the challenges here. And, you know, and I think if we look at all this, you know, we think this World Cup is not great in Russia. And then the next one goes to Qatar, another country with deep human rights problems and issues. And I think this is one of the great questions. Look, we're not in the position we were in the 1980s when the USA boycotted the Moscow Olympics, then the USSR boycotted the Los Angeles Olympics. But I do think there is a kind of interesting question here about, I think, sporting politics is coming back. You know, the idea that, you know, we are on an inevitable road to liberal democracy, the kind of end of history thesis, has been so disproved that I think that sporting politics is probably back in quite a big way.
Thank you, James, and thank you, Katie. And just a reminder that this podcast is called Coffee House Shots. If you like it, please do let us know on the iTunes store. And we've got a special subscription offer. If you'd like to receive a month free access to The Spectator this summer, just go to spectator.co.uk/summer. Thanks for listening.